Well, hello, friends. Mark DeMatteo coming at you with another new message going out to our Great Questions group on this, well, late Saturday night, early Sunday morning, the 29th of, I guess, officially now, of March 2015. And I'm bringing to you message number 41. Title is Considering Space Part 6. Subtitle, Contemplating Confinement. Considering the Condition of Being Inner Space Bound, Part 2. Okay? And as we get started, let me just say a quick welcome to those of you that have joined us since our last message. And to remind you, especially if you are new, that my previous audios are all posted on my website, which is markdematteo.com. And that's markdematteo.com. And so at your leisure, if you have not heard them, you can check them out and see how we've arrived to this point in this series. Okay? So, well, all right then, let's get rolling because, as always, I'm excited about sharing this information with you. And folks, in our previous message, we began considering this reality of our being inner space bound and the limitations this condition imposes upon us. We discussed the fact that we are basically trapped within our own private domain, confined to exist within the space occupied by our physical bodies, and that we are essentially unable to get out, nor are we able to let anyone else in. Yet the irony is, the paradox is, that we, at the same time, have this deep-seated need for interaction with others. We desire communication, connection, and relationships on a variety of different levels. And furthermore, that the longing to love and be loved by someone is no doubt one of the highest universal needs found within us. However, in spite of this amazing ability we possess to communicate, our capacity to connect and develop the relationships we desire is fundamentally limited. Consequently, the dilemma of being inner space bound is that we most often find ourselves having to deal with a level of inadequacy in all of our relationships, which usually leaves us with a nagging sense of dissatisfaction, a degree, if you will, of emptiness in the core of our being. In fact, it's almost like we have what we might call a relational cup within us that we are unable to adequately fill. And folks, in our previous message, we focused primarily on this condition in the context of our desire for mental and emotional connection. Now let's take a few moments and consider these same limitations in regard to our desire for physical connection. For along with this fundamental need for mental and emotional connection and closeness, we also have an inbred innate desire for physical closeness and connection as well. And while the degree and level of this desire can also vary substantially between individual people, there is still no doubt that it is likewise another universal need found in humankind, and one which also has apparently been wired into us. And this common need, put simply and succinctly, is for one primary thing: touch. If we look up the word touch, it can be defined as to come so close to something as to be in contact with it, or to come in contact with it. And in our context, the something referred to here is primarily a someone. Folks, at certain times and in certain ways, you and I, all of us, have an inherent desire to come so close to another person as to come into physical contact with them. It is only the rare, unusual, and might we even say abnormal person who never wants any physical contact between themselves and any other person ever. On the contrary, virtually all of us occasionally want to be able to touch others and to have others touch us too. Folks, as with our ability to communicate verbally, our capacity for touch is another marvelous phenomenon, one which is at the same time amazingly simple and yet also profoundly complex. Physiologically, the vast litany of events, which must also be precisely orchestrated to allow the sense of touch, easily rival the complexity of those that allow us to talk and listen, which, as you recall, we discussed rather extensively in our previous message. For not only do we have an extraordinary sensory perception through the nerves of our skin, but furthermore, our mental, emotional, and biological responses can automatically vary and vary dramatically based on the context surrounding each type of contact. Folks, when you stop and think about it, isn't it quite remarkable just how powerful a simple touch can be? The profound level of mental and emotional awareness, which can often be conveyed through even brief physical contact, can be quite amazing. It is no doubt another significant form of communication, and one which can often augment and sometimes even transcend spoken communication. For the touch can provide us with a level of understanding, closeness, and connection we might not gain otherwise. To begin with, this desire certainly also applies to inanimate objects. Think of how many non-living things we go about to touch in our daily lives, as it helps us gain some type of connection with them, plus the fact we normally just simply enjoy doing it. How about the pleasure the feeling of our favorite blanket or pillow may give us, right? And what about our favorite pair of old comfy jeans, tennis shoes, and sweatshirt? Consider the last time we went shopping, especially for something a little more exciting and significant, say like perhaps clothes or furniture or even some type of electronic device or appliance. Do we go looking just with our eyes, or do we also normally look with our hands if we are able? And what about the last time we went shopping for a new car or even a new home? How much touchy-feely, quote, tactile research did we do then? And as a brief aside, I personally have always wondered why certain things begin to feel good in your hands. For instance, in my case, a racquetball racket, motorcycle handlebars, a pistol, a golf club, a steering wheel and gear shift, a favorite book. What makes them do so? I have held my vacuum cleaner handle in my hand for quite some time too, and it doesn't feel the same way. Well, you say, of course not, Mark. You probably don't get a whole lot of enjoyment from vacuuming. And I would say true. I can't say that I do, except for the fact that I like that it is cleaner afterwards. However, I have a nice set of colored pens that I use to journal with, something which I do enjoy, and have probably held those pens collectively far longer than any of the other aforementioned items. And they still don't feel the same way in my hands. So what's up with that? And actually, I have often wondered about what kind of a cause and effect relationship might be operating behind this interesting little reality. And we will eventually come back to this. But next, let's look at this desire for touch in regard to animals. Here we move into, or onto, a whole new level of contact interaction. For unlike the case of inanimate objects, the desire for touch in animals is often mutual. For let us just consider our pets for a moment. Though it can vary significantly depending on the type of animal and their individual personality, I think no one would argue that in the main, most pets crave and enjoy physical contact with people. In fact, everything else being equal, the more interactive they are, the more personable, friendly, and affectionate, then normally the more popular that particular type of animal will be for pets. Kitties, horses, some birds, and even elephants, right? And I'm sure there are others. Normally, all love at least some contact with people, and some want a bunch. And speaking of wanting it a bunch, there is no doubt that the undisputed kings of contact are our canine friends, the dogs. Folks, I think it is safe to say that in the animal world, no other creature rivals a dog's innate desire for human interaction and touch. There is good reason they have been bequeathed the title of man's best friend. They can be beautiful and sweet, are normally loyal, quick to forgive, live in the moment, and love unconditionally, no matter who you are, how old you are, or what you do or don't have. They are always excited to see us and usually greet us with jumps and barks of joy, doggy smiles and licks, wagging tails and body bumps, right? All saying in essence, it's so good to see you. I'm so glad you're home, right? Right? I'm sure many of you are chuckling now as I'm saying this, especially if you have a dog or two or three or 10, whatever, okay? They are great. In a unique way, dogs seem to live for human touch, connection, interaction, friendship, and love. In fact, they too, just like us, appear to be actually wired this way. Moreover, they, no doubt, are wired to the max, for their desire for interaction with people can almost appear insatiable. Who hasn't had or perhaps known a dog that seemingly couldn't be petted and played with enough, no matter how long you went? For no matter how long you went, they were still ready for some more. And when you did finally stop, if for no other reason but sheer exhaustion, they still ended up laying on your foot or right up against you, being snuggle bugs nonetheless. Yes, there's no doubt about it. Doggies are amazing creatures. They love to touch and be touched. And the cool thing about it is most of us enjoy the interaction as well, even if we don't quite have the stamina or desire they do. It is all part, folks, of this amazing need for connection that not only we have, but also many of the creatures around us have as well. And furthermore, this desire can also be shared by other creatures we are normally less likely to interact with. I remember many years ago watching a documentary movie on whales, which was produced by Jacques Cousteau. Over the years, I have forgotten most of the details of what the movie was about, other than obviously their pursuit of studying these largest of creatures to ever inhabit the earth. However, there is an image from the very last part of the program which is still firmly imprinted in my mind, and it is worth sharing with you in the context of our present discussion. The narrator, as I recall, had been summarizing the team's amazing experience studying and interacting with these gentle and intelligent giants of the deep, which they had been trying to recount throughout the program. As he did so, a variety of images briefly crossed the screen, which corresponded to the events he was reviewing, which they had shown previously on the show. As he began to conclude, however, the scene cut to a shot which I have never forgotten. The camera was almost at the surface level of the ocean, and the sun was in such a position that it was making the water sparkle. On the right side, quite close, was one of those inflatable rubber Zodiac boats with a couple of the Cousteau divers inside it. The narrator was now explaining that even though they had advanced so far in their knowledge, there was still so much more that they wanted to know about these extraordinary creatures which inhabit our planet with us. And they were confident, he continued, for though man and whales obviously have a large divide separating them as to nature and environment, The first universal step to a progressive development of understanding is the simple and yet profound act of touch. As he said this, an enormous whale slowly and gently stuck its nose, right? We know it has a blowhole, but its nose, right? Out of the water, right beside the boat, as if to say hello. And one of the divers reached over and gently touched him. The sun was still sparkling on the water, but now it glistened off both the whale and the diver. The scene froze. Accompanied by the show's theme music, the credits began to roll by, and that's how the movie ended. It was quite dramatic, and it obviously made a significant impression on me. Yet it bears out once again that the universal language of connection is indeed the touch. Whew, still gets me emotional thinking about it, gang. I mean, it's amazing, the emotions, and we're going to talk more about that in us. And the whole theme of all this is why I'm going into this at great length. I'm elaborating on this because this is stuff that I thought about, I became aware of, that we're all aware of, but focusing on it and reflecting on it, it is hugely significant when we really start connecting the dots as to a cause and effect relationship and a reality to all this, which we're going to talk about, okay? But right now, so now, let's consider this need for physical touch in regard to other people. For though we certainly feel this desire towards other non-living and living things, there is no doubt that it is greatest towards our fellow human beings. And there is something totally different about touching another person, right? The range of feelings and intensity of emotions we are capable of experiencing can rise to entirely new levels with physical contact between two different people. And of course, this range will vary dramatically depending on the context of the touch. In the time we have remaining then, let's begin to explore a basic progression of these that we will all probably relate to. To begin with, most of us have the desire for a little initial physical contact even with people we have just met, normally in the form of a brief handshake. And while brief, I have often reflected on just how much unspoken information can be transmitted through a simple handshake. As an acquaintanceship or friendship progresses, so normally will the type and frequency of the contact. This will vary, of course, depending on whether the individuals involved This will vary, of course, depending on whether the individuals involved are of a more reserved and restrained disposition or are more wide-open, touchy-feely types like us Latin-blooded folks, right? Including yours truly, all right? Whew, okay. But being very general, this might include perhaps a little arm or hand-holding, a little hug, a little kiss on the cheek perhaps, especially if they are girls, to a little arm sock, a little knuckle wrap, a little give me some love hug, a little roughhousing or wrestling around, particularly if they are guys. And this is just to name a few. I'm sure we can all think of more. I mean, who hasn't seen an older guy grab his younger brother or little buddy and give him a little noogie on the head, right? I sure have, right? And speaking of close friendship contact, let's talk about the best there is, the warm little hug. I mean, who doesn't like to get a little hug from time to time and also like to give a little hug occasionally too? I think we need them. And is there anything better to brighten your day and warm your heart than a little warm little hug from a caring friend, right? They are the best. And furthermore, all these touch interactions can most assuredly help foster the development of the relationship themselves. For they all tend to be spontaneous gestures we like to give and receive, which also strengthen connection. Now, unfortunately, we are already out of time in this message. As I'm already at 20 minutes plus, and I'm trying not to let these get too long. However, next time we are going to pick up right here where we have left off and talk for a few moments about our next topic or on our next topic, and that is our desire for touch in the context of kids. Something else that I'm sure will resonate with all of us. So until then, gang, this is Marcus D signing off, wishing all of you another wonder-filled day. Take care, folks, and we'll be in touch. Okay, bye-bye now.